Welcome to the Weekly Word, Dear. I'm your host, Adrian Dayton.
Good morning, guys. Good evening for those of us in the United States. How's everyone doing?
Very well, thanks.
Do we have Daryl and Simon with us? So if everyone would like to introduce themselves, that'd be great.
This is Daryl now.
Okay, great, Daryl. Yeah, do you want to kind of introduce yourself? Great, glad to hear you are on the call.
Sure, I'm here, and just across from the room from me is Simon, so we're both ready to go here. I'm a lawyer based in Vancouver, and involved in virtual law practice. I'm a representative of Direct Law, which is run by Richard Granite and
Excellent, excellent. And now, Daryl, you are a member of the ABA's e-lawyer task force?
That's right, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the e-lawyering task force is designed to help lawyers practice over the Internet. So, we're a subsection of the law practice management branch of the ABA.
Excellent.
Yeah, so there are about 15 of us, I think. And the leaders are Richard Granite and Mark Lauritsen.
Excellent, excellent. Well, hopefully we can hear a little bit more about that in the call. And Simon, do we have you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you want to give a quick intro? I'm kind of totally thrown off the way this call's proceeded, but appreciate everyone hanging on for us.
Yes, so I call myself a lapsed lawyer who, for the last 25 years, has been trying to evangelize the use of technology by the lawyers themselves. And, as some people say, I could have gone to the beach for the first 10 years or so, but I'm glad I've stayed around because there's some interesting things happening.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know what? Why don't we just get started with you, Simon, if that's okay. And for everyone on the call, my name's Adrian Dayton. I am also a lawyer here, licensed to practice here in New York State. Although most of my time I've focused on social media, and I'll be spending the month of March in Australia speaking at a number of events, including a social media boot camp towards the end on the 23rd in Sydney and the 25th in March in Melbourne. But let's get started on some questions, because I want to hear a little bit. Now, Simon, what is your technical background? Because obviously in law school they don't teach you all this technology.
Well, I'm doing the University of Do-It-Yourself undergraduate course. It's been going about 25 years now. Had hoped to finish it many years ago, but they keep on adding new subjects to it, like networking and the reading list grows, and I've got to blame you for that. Your text on social media, the Twitter edition, is on our reading list.
Excellent.
So no formal qualifications, but very much something in the trenches and, via the Internet, etc.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Now, when was it that you kind of realized that that law firms, I mean, I've read some of your articles talking about how law firms have such a challenge using these new technologies. Why is it such a challenge?
There's really just too many things. This is... essentially the whole culture does not support innovation, change, etc., particularly at the big end of town. And as Professor Richard Susskind said, it's very difficult to convince a room full of millionaires that they do need to change anything. That was the case prior to 2009 and the GFC. So we're certainly seeing a completely different environment now, both from the client's perspective and from the law firms themselves.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Daryl Mountain, would you like to say something on that? I mean, what do you think about that that challenge? Because I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it talking to management at firms where they're just resistant, even if technology is proven.
Yeah, I think the difficulty is moving from a craft mentality to a business process mentality. And I'll give you an example. I heard a lawyer recently describe, a lawyer who does wills, describe the process of drafting a high-end will. and it was very much like sculpture. You start off with every possible provision that you could have in the will, and you take away. It's like you're sculpting. You're removing the unnecessary provisions until you're left with what you need. And that's so different from the business process mentality of document assembly, where you have a decision tree that's running the document. And a lot of this stuff is being done by computer. So the change in mindset is huge, to go from that craft mentality of sculpture to just a digital business process.
So to kind of restate what you're saying, I mean, the problem is they're not willing to change the process.
That's right, and it's tough to shift the mentality. Just like in the days of the Industrial Revolution, there had to be a total. You didn't set up the factory in a craftsman's workshop. You had to build separate factories and totally change the mindset of how things would be done.
Well, I'll give each of you a chance to answer this, but what are some of these technologies, and I think you hinted at some in talking about process there, Daryl, but what are some of the very affordable, helpful technologies that lawyers and law firms should be made aware of that really aren't getting the kind of widespread use they should?
Well, the one I'm involved in most heavily is document assembly, and document assembly basically turns a document into a decision tree. And so instead of cutting and pasting using Word, in its most extreme form, you can actually have the client themselves do the first draft of the document. And that, so they go online, they answer interview questions, and the answers then go in and populate the document, which then creates the first draft of the document for the lawyer. So that speeds up the process of document drafting by, it's estimated, about 7 to 10 times using this technology. Yeah. So it's a combination of document assembly and the internet.
Well, and it seems like this concept would be very threatening to some lawyers for obvious reasons. I mean, for one, it kind of commoditizes what they do and what they're trained to do. What's kind of your answer for that?
Well, that is true. And document assembly, I think the craftspeople at the very top of the food chain, I don't think they need to feel threatened by this type of technology. It's more at the small firms that. For instance, document assembly is used a lot in preparing wills, and if you're if you work in a small firm and you're doing wills the traditional way, I think your days of doing it are numbered. I think eventually these new ways of doing it will come into place and make life difficult for you.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially because you can't deny the power of the competitive forces. So once people start using this model that's more efficient, even once a percentage of them do that, they can offer the service at a substantially lower price, and that's what's going to happen. One of my clients right now, they're a very large firm, and they've done some alternative fee arrangements in order to bring new clients in the door, but they really don't want the rest of the firm to know this because they're so worried. That it's going to be a slippery slope, kind of the slippery slope effect, right? But, my point to them is, in a year or two, all your competitors, they'll be offering alternative fee arrangements to try and steal your clients. So, you have to be ready to adapt. And I think for the last maybe 100 years, 200 years, lawyers, they were doing things, like you said, with wills, pretty much the same way they used to do them. And with the new technology, it seems like, what you're saying is that they're not going to be able to survive as long anymore.
That's right, particularly at the low end.
All right, what do you think, Simon?
Yes, I'm a big fan of document assembly, and as the great Peter Hart said, who was one of the pioneers of this area, he said, Dockham Assembly is like heaven, where lawyers would like to be, but not just yet. But, but I also like to emphasise, I've coined a phrase, term infrastructure. What really needs to be accepted at the bigger end of town is the matter management, case management that actually the small firms have had for quite some time. And
how does that work?
Well, essentially it gives you a matter management or case management system such as Amicus Attorney, which is very lawyer friendly, or the very powerful Time Matters from LexisNexis, gives you pigeonholes to put your all the information about a matter. Forget the accounting and all that, that's still there, but we have to be careful we don't have the old tail wags the dog. What we need to do is look at information that's needed on a matter and all the bits and pieces, and providing a pigeonhole for that, which then frees up the lawyers to be better lawyers. If they don't have to remember they've got to do this and got to do that and this is imminent, then they become more creative as they move towards going back towards being the strategic advisor to their clients.
Yes, yes. You know, I think that's a great point. And, you know, I attended Legal Tech in New York last week, and Malcolm Gladwell gave this example that you kind of made me think of where, they first started teaching computers how to play chess, and the master chess grandmasters would play against the computers, and eventually all the computers could beat every grandmaster. So what they did is the grandmasters then started playing with a computer at their side, helping them and doing all the calculations for them. And Gladwell said what this did, according to the grandmasters, is it freed up their attention to focus on strategy and creativity, the things that the computer could not do. And I really think, you know, and I think this speaks to your point that it frees up lawyers to do what they do best if they can get some of these processes, you know, mechanized, like matter management.
Exactly.
So excellent. Well, so now, and this kind of leads to kind of a new model. I want to talk a little bit about virtual law firms, and we have kind of a one of the experts in Australia on this, Jeremy Schweider. And Jeremy, before we get into kind of the mechanics of a virtual law firm, I want to hear a little bit about your kind of past, your history. What is it that led you to this model and to founding, you know, Bespoke Law, this virtual law firm?
Sure, Adrian. I've been sitting here patiently and happy to jump into that. I'm obviously very passionate about the virtual law firm model. In terms of my background, before I launched my concept at Bespoke Law, which was launched early 2009, I spent several years working in private practice, some of the large law firms in UK and Australia, and then most recently prior to Bespoke Law, I worked in-house as a general counsel at the Carphone Warehouse Group of Companies in the UK. So it was primarily my experience working in-house and in a fast-moving competitive telco environment that was Carphone Warehouse that I learned a lot of my trade and was an instigator to come up with this concept of a virtual law firm. So I've always felt, Adrian, that clients could get a better value for legal services and lawyers, most importantly, become more aligned with clients' business needs. And working in this in-house environment, I'm very much an advocate of in-house environment, albeit that I've now set up my hybrid in-house structure of Bespoke Law. I've always felt that lawyers have a lot to offer in business speak and being strategic advisors for the wider business. But there was this gap in the market. I felt that there was a gap somewhere in between this in-house business model and private practice, somewhere in the middle. So that's where I came up with this, what I call a hybrid model, if you can call it a new third tier of the legal profession, for want of a better phrase, and that effectively it merges in-house qualities with private practice, and it's this virtual law firm platform and technology that allows a lawyer to do that.
Now, so tell me a little bit about, when I think of virtual law firm, I think of, somebody that can basically do their legal work, but basically, in the comfort of their home office, right? But obviously that's great for the lawyer. It's a good quality of life to not have to, commute and park in a big parking garage and, all that stuff. So what are the primary benefits to the company that's using the virtual lawyer?
I just the first point there, I think you mentioned that the busy car park and so on we were talking earlier, and I thought your understanding of us here in Australia is that we operate these virtual law firms from the beach, but that doesn't actually occur, but it's not too far from the truth because, leading on to your question, Adrian, primary benefit from a lawyer's perspective, us operating these virtual law firms, it does foster a fantastic flexibility and great work-life balance. It doesn't take away from the fact that you work hard and work long hours, but we've moved away from your traditional 9-to-5 office environment, certainly your traditional high-rise office environment with the fancy boardroom, so to speak. And with the beauty and luxuries of technology, we are able to provide this global service from wherever we are at any time, and the client is able to take advantage of that whenever he or she wants it by the click of a button. So, from a lawyer's perspective, it's that flexibility. It's a breath of fresh air. I think it's great. The legal profession is a esteemed, old-fashioned profession. So it's really exciting. I'm quite passionate about it because it's exciting that this old-fashioned profession is now moving into this e-commerce boom with the luxuries of technology in the virtual world. So that's, the fun side of it. In terms of the business model and moving to clients and the benefits for them, there is, and we're obviously dictated by the fact that it's a buyer's market in today's competitive marketplace. There's obviously this direct financial advantage. So do you want me to go into this whole topic of direct financial advantage? For me, that's the primary benefit.
Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, and I think I want to understand, wrap my head a little bit around how the billing is going to work, because I know a lot of companies, they're okay with billable hours because it helps them budget, but in this increasingly competitive market, a lot want alternative fee arrangements. Where does the virtual law firm fit in with that?
Yeah, look, the virtual law firm, and I differentiate the virtual law firm of the last decade. I believe that we're moving into the 2010 virtual law firm. The virtual law firm of 2010 really does push these alternative fee arrangements, and there's a whole number of different flexible models that can be adopted. At the end of the day, it needs to be the correct fee model that works with the client and the particular transaction or project. It needs to be dictated by the value of the product or the service in the marketplace. That's a basic fundamental economic principle. So in terms of specifics, Adrian, value-based billing, if I can call it that, it promotes efficiency in working practices. It aligns the lawyer with the client's business and the business needs, and it also, most importantly, it drives or incentivizes the lawyer to get the job done and work with the client. And there are a variety of alternative fee arrangements that can be used. There's retainers, cap fees, value pricing, incentivized.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, and as you talk about this, it occurs to me that with the virtual law firm, you have the flexibility to completely change your billing for every client and every matter, and that kind of flexibility, like we were talking before, is not a luxury that these
No, that's right. Correct, Adrian, you're spot on. Virtual law firm, by their very nature, have removed lots of overheads, all of what we consider are unnecessary overheads that the traditional law firms have. We've removed overheads and administrative infrastructure, and we've gotten rid of the high-rise offices with the fancy boardroom and artwork and branded stationery. I know we all like going, once a year or however often, to those fancy boardrooms and grabbing one of those branded notepads or whatever and forgetting that it's there, briefcase and walked away. So maybe it's that's the focus. But yeah, we've removed all of that, and as a result, in removing overheads, we're able to rival these traditional law firms, and you know the savings that we've factored into this financial model is somewhere between 30% and 50% of what these traditional law firms offer, and that's as a result of reduction in overheads plus these alternative fee arrangements.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and why don't we kind of open this up to everyone else with kind of my next question, and as we're kind of coming to the end, where this call got cut a little bit short, but so how do virtual law firms and how do the law firms of the future take advantage of emerging technologies, especially with social media? You know, that obviously that's my passion, but what's the role that all of you see that having? Maybe Daryl, do you want to jump in and tell us what you think of this emerging technology?
I just wanted to point out that there are actually two types of virtual law firm, and the first type is what Jeremy was just describing, where the lawyer is on a beach somewhere, and maybe his support staff is, you know, on another beach up the coast, and they just communicate over the internet. The other type of virtual law firm is where the lawyer and the client communicate in a secure area. So there's a secure area of client communication where they communicate over the internet. And there's sort of a debate right now as to which type, you know, is the most promising. I tend to think that combining the two would be sort of give you the best of both worlds. If you could be on the beach and have a secure area to interact with your clients.
So the idea is that if you're sitting on a beach with a wireless connection, that's never going to be as secure as having some other type of better security measures?
Yeah, that's right. And there are two companies in the United States, Direct Law and VLO Tech, and they've created these virtual law firm platforms. And so basically Direct Law, I know most about Direct Law. It's operating in the U.S. and the U.K., and it's about to launch in Canada. And the idea behind that is it's a virtual law firm platform in a box. So you can take your law practice and plug it into this platform, and it will give you the secure client communication area. And it also plugs you into the various precedents for your particular jurisdiction, and they've all been automated using document assembly. Mm-hmm. So the idea is the client goes in, registers with the site, passes a conflict check, then goes into the secure area, and answers all the say they want to do a will. They answer all the interview questions. That creates the first draft of the will. The lawyer gets pinged on the other end that the draft is ready, and then the lawyer can review the will with the client. And ideally, the lawyer and the client never actually meet physically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, and I think it sounds like a great model, and really has the potential to be quite disruptive, especially if you can provide the type of savings that Jeremy was speaking about. But I guess what do you think, though, Jill? Do you see this model catching on in North America? And what kind of penetration?
I can't remember how many. They seem to be getting new clients, a steady stream of new clients, Direct Law. And the idea is to target what Richard Susskind calls the latent legal market. So you have a whole bunch of people out there who, either because of the cost or because of the inconvenience, just can't find the time to go and see a lawyer. Or spend the money to see a lawyer, for example, to do a will, and these people are in, you know, they're in. I'm not talking someone with a $60 million estate. I'm talking, you know, an average person.
Yeah.
Yeah, with this model, they could, you know, they could start doing their will at midnight if they felt like it on their computer, and then they don't have to take time off work to go meet the lawyer in the lawyer's office. That sort of. So it just streamlines the whole process.
Adrian, if I can just throw something into the mix, I think what was just mentioned previously, that it's quite important to emphasise that there is these two types of virtual law firms, and that's why I mentioned earlier you have the New Age Virtual Law Firm of 2010, and I think what's key is communication, obviously technology, but the old-fashioned virtual law firm adopted the pure e-commerce model where we shop at a supermarket online and you don't need to actually see the shop assistant. We buy music on iTunes, we shop at Amazon, and it's really easy and accessible and so on. But the legal profession is quite unique, and the virtual law firm 2010 takes the next step and actually provides that virtual world and the ease and accessibility, but actually emphasises the need for the client to still have that communication and the face-to-face contact. And that's a really important point. And, you know, the web-based software that was mentioned, there's lots out there now that are pushing in the marketplace, helps facilitate that. But it's key for everyone out there in the place to know that it's not a supermarket where you just go off to online and buy a legal service. It's a really basic way to put it. It's like the old-fashioned communication model, but it's a lot better because through the luxuries of technology, we actually foster a much better communication relationship. And then that, coupled with alternative fee arrangements and no hourly rates and so on, means that we have this fantastic, easy, accessible final product.
It sounds great. And now, so I have a lot of people that approach me that are just getting started as lawyers. It's a really a tough time to come out of law school right now, as most of you probably know. And so I'm curious, you know, if an attorney comes to me and says, you know, I can't get any work locally, I'm going to start a virtual law firm. Two questions. First of all, how do they get started? And second of all, how do they find their first clients?
I'll start by answering that, Adrian. I think how do they get started? There's obviously a long list of things to do to get started, but my advice is just to keep it really simple. It's as simple as having an internet connection and a BlackBerry or an iPhone, and the world is your oyster after that. That's a very simplistic answer, but I think it's quite important to be kept simple because, as we said earlier, lawyers, by their very nature, will find it difficult to move and change. They are a big ship that needs to be shaken, and it's very hard to do. So my advice is just to keep it simple, get on board with the normal, the basic technology features such as Skype, video conferencing, and they've obviously got BlackBerry's, iPhones, emails and so on. Once you get on board with that, there's the security issues such as backups and keeping it a secure environment, disaster recovery, and then you move on to, and it'll flow with that, and you decide, how do I get new clients in the door? So how would you normally do marketing? Jump onto the social media environment, LinkedIn, the Twitters of the world, and it will just flow from there. That's a very simplistic answer, but I think it's really important.
I think that's the great idea to get us started. And you know, I think combining this with some of the other technology that Daryl and Simon have talked about with decision trees, you know, if you take out a lot of that kind of mechanical, kind of rote memorization, if you take out that part of law, you know, suddenly it makes it so a younger attorney may be able to handle, you know, a matter like a will, where they can just focus on the few legal matters that are part of an individual's will. So that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Simon, did you want to chime in on this or about social media, how it's changing law firms? But as we're just finishing up here.
Certainly. The social media certainly is changing, but it's more a communication, medium. And I'll get back to the very boring. Look, we need in place an infrastructure, a database. Give it a name. Call it case management, matter management, because you also need to be able to cope with your success. If you don't have in place systems and processes, that can cope. Then all it means with a successful marketing campaign is that you have a lot of people unhappy with work as opposed to, you know, what you want.
Yeah,
Again,
yeah,
I get that, back to the, to the basics, and you know, even if it means putting new labels on old things, you know, like tagging instead of a thesauri, you know, that's been in large firms for years, but as a taxonomy or whatever, but that's very unfashionable. If we call it tagging, fine. It's essentially, there's a lot of undiscovered tools out there that we need to put in place. It then means that, online matter tracking and mobile devices and all the other document assembly, if they sit on a solid data management platform, then you're in good stead. Otherwise, you risk, skating on thin ice if you all of a sudden get busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent, excellent. Well, some great points from all of you. And just as we close here, I just think it's quite fascinating that even the four of us have never met in person. You know, we have a Canadian. I'm from the United States. The organizer of this call is the LexisNexis office in the UK. And Jeremy, I met through Martindale Hubble Connected. Through that, we were able to exchange Skype information and talk and chat through there. Over email, make introductions to Simon and Daryl, and powerful, powerful tools. I mean, just 10 years ago, it would have been very difficult to put something like this together. But I really feel like it's just the tip of the iceberg because, like you were saying, Simon, we have the power with these tools to start doing things in terms of marketing that we've never done before. But do we have the processes in place to deal with that? And I think turning social media and creating a process, that deals with all these things, it is going to be a big, is going to be a big part of the next 5 years. And I applaud the work of Jeremy with Bespoke Law in Australia, taking that virtual law firm and making that work because there aren't a lot of people using that model right now, but. I think in the future that's going to be seen as a much more common and a very valuable model. So I want to thank everyone for joining on the call. We're way over time, but I just wanted to see if anybody had any other questions or comments they wanted to add. All right. Well, been so great. Really appreciate your time, Jeremy, Simon, Daryl. Any of you have any final words you'd like to say?
I'll just say that in the virtual world, virtually anything is possible.
Okay. That sounds good. Anyone else have something that can top that? All right. Well, you guys have a fine morning, those that are calling in Australia, and a good night to those in the U.S. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to seeing you guys the next time in Australia.
Thanks, Adrian. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
This has been Adrian Dayton, and thank you for joining us on the weekly Word Dear.